Welcome to a very exciting episode 2, season 6 of the Dialogue series. As always, we try to make our episodes things about factors and issues that we don't always think about. But from time to time, we realize from an editorial perspective just how important there are individuals, communities, and organizations that do some amazing work. And it's fun to talk to as well. Today, our guest is Jack Sim, and I'll let him do his introduction in a bit. But the best way to describe Jack is social entrepreneur, founder of the World Toilet Organization, a proud Singaporean, and somebody who's really exported Singapore's values to the world. And we're going to talk about exploration on not what you'd expect, which is all about the WTO, as much as Jack's values and understandings. And I had a chance to speak with Jack very briefly some time ago, and it got me really thinking about the word gumption. And this is something Jack's taught me or reminded me of. Gumption is a word that we don't use much. And we're going to talk about what that means in terms of courage, resolve, resourceful initiatives. How can that today, in today's world that is getting more and more unpredictable by the second, can inspire systemic change, even in places that were once taboo, and the toilet organization being one that we'll continuously talk about. We'll talk about Jack's book, Gumption, his global impact through the sanitation movement, and we'll examine how unconventional thinking and civic determination can transform not just policies, but overall paradigms. And I'm so, so proud and happy, Jack, to have you here. Please give us an introduction for our listeners and viewers.
Yes, thank you for the invite. My name is Jack Sim. I'm the founder of the World Toilet Organization. It sounds a little bit strange to talk about toilet, but it's not strange at all because you visit the toilet 6 to 8 times a day. If you do something 6 to 8 times a day, it is called culture. You eat 3 times a day, it's called culture. You have shopping culture, entertainment culture, clothing culture, and of course, we must include toilet culture. And the better your toilet culture, the higher your quality of life. It starts with when I discovered that the world has 40% of population that don't have access to a proper toilet. So this is a really, really strange thing, because how could the world has 40%, which is like 2.5 billion people, without proper sanitation, no toilet, defecating on roadside, in the farm, and a lot of women are raped when they were defecating openly, and men saw them naked and they raped them also when they are taking bath by the river. So I think the world cannot continue to neglect a subject, even though it is non-charismatic and many consider it embarrassing. So I was a businessman in 2001. In 1998, I sold all my businesses and started the Restroom Association of Singapore to clean up public toilet in Singapore. I was able to do everything for free because I was financially independent, and because the subject of toilet sanitation doesn't attract any funding. Nobody wants to fund. They want to fund water. They want to fund forests, glamorous things called green and blue issue, but not brown issue. So since I'm able to work for free, I've been working the last 28 years for free. So I started when I was 40. I retired to do this social work, and now I'm 68. And over the last 25 years after founding the World Toilet Organization in 2001, we have created access to proper sanitation for 2.5 billion people, which is that number that we first started with. But the world have increased its population by another 2 billion, and those are from the developing country. The developed country are not replacing themselves, so all the growth are from developing country, and we have to go and help them to do this. So there are two types of problem in the world. One is public toilets that needs to be cleaned, and you can see that we have helped China clean up every tourism toilet in China. All tourism toilets are clean now for 1.4 billion people country that's large. We have helped Prime Minister Modi and even before him, the Congress Party, Jairam Ramesh, to build a toilet culture, and now he's built 110 million toilets under the Clean India mission. We have also helped the Brazilian change their law to allow private public partnership. That means foreign and local commercial investor can invest in their sewage treatment plant. Because when I went to see in 2019, 50% of all their shit are not treated in the favelas and in the rural area. So they have no money to invest in their sewage treatment plant. So I suggest to them this new law, and I lobbied together with their local NGO called Trata Brazil, and I managed to convince 79 senators to pass this law. And ever since it became law a year later, 2020, so the last 4.5 years, $14 billion have been invested in their sewage treatment plant. And 2 years ago, I went back there and I take a look, and I can see that the children are so happy playing on the neighborhood because there's no more flies coming in from the poop in the drains in front of their house, and the neighborhood don't smells with all the poop flush onto the drains. So I think these are the kind of work that people don't realize that need to be done, but once they hear about it, they do feel affected and wants to support.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think you sparked so much just in that little opening. I myself have been a WHO technical advisor, and in my younger years, I was carrying ice boxes for nurses, vaccination nurses in parts of Vietnam and even in small regions in India. And it's a serious issue. I mean, it's not just, you know, a cosmetic issue or just a cleanliness issue as much as it is a communicable disease issue. Because if you look at the eradication of polio, I mean, you know, and other things like rotaviral diarrhea that was killing, I mean, you know, how many millions of infants just in our region alone has been one of the biggest achievements. And a lot of that is to do with having sanitation and toilets that are just more, you know, removing, I guess, that transmission, right? I mean, you'd know better between, let's say, fecal matter interfering with, let's say, children not knowing better, putting, you know, a fecal oral route, right? I think that's what it was called. Yeah. And that sort of separation of sanitation and communities is obviously, as you know, just so much bigger than anything, right? So it's amazing. And I think that's something that a lot of our policy-based listeners and viewers always comment on, which is, you know, how are we going to make a difference when it comes to policy shaping in this very, very convoluted world? Jack, let me move then into, I guess, the concept, as your book very, very, I think, smartly said, and I want this to really come out now to our viewers and maybe even amplify this, about gumption. Gumption is a word that not many people use now. So I want you to also explain that a little bit, but I want to talk about this in the context of the tech saturated world that we live in today, where everything just seems to be so much more automated without really understanding the concept. So as we talk about our journey, your journey, and how things work, describe gumption. And what does that really mean? What does it inspire? Why did it inspire you?
Thank you. So education used to be the exclusive domain of the scholars. So most people are agrarian society. They are farmers, fishermen, craftsmen. And the educated people are the elite. The scholar, the mandarins, the emperor's advisor. Then education becomes widespread, but it is still inside an elitist group of university graduates. But today, knowledge is no more power. Knowledge is a commodity. You don't need to know. You just need to ask ChatGPT or DeepSeek or any of these platforms, and they will tell you the answer in quite a detailed manner. You can write a song by just prompting, and I saw a lot of toilet songs being written very, very well, and the musics are very beautiful and lyrics, but they are all written and sang by AI. Now you can make movies with AI through Sora video. So I think that we are entering an educational revolution that does not require rote learning. Yet our educational system is still examination orientated, memory based, and rote learning, and then they pressure cook the children in rows and rows of plantation cabbages, very, very uniform, looking like one another. And when these cabbages goes to society, they saw a rainforest, which is a higher order, which they don't understand. It's an order. It looks like chaos to them. Why are the trees not growing like straight line? Why are there creepers? Why are there animals? Why are there birds? I never thought that there was such thing except cabbages, which are fertilized by the teacher, pesticide by the teacher, water by the teacher, and then you all turn out looking like one another. Now, what happened is today the more valuable skills is not memory. You don't have to remember whether Parameswara came to Singapore at what year or Hitler did whatever he did in the Second World War in what year, or Alexander the Great or Akbar or Genghis Khan. It's not important anymore, because if you want to know, you just ask the AI, right? What is important is your ability to ask the question. That means you need curiosity. And curiosity requires you to have imagination. If you don't have imagination, you don't have question, because you felt, okay, I know enough. So curiosity requires courage. So the next C is courage. These are all the values of gumption, right? You need the courage to think outside the box, and the courage to defy the current norms. Because if you conform with the norms, you're not going to create anything new. And then eventually you become redundant, because AI will take over all your routine job. So if your brain is still thinking in a routine manner, then you're going to be quite useless. And a lot of graduates, even today in Singapore, and already have been happening in the West, they graduate without a job. So I was in Germany wondering why graduates are waitress, and in America, why graduates are working at the hamburger store. So these are strange things for us, but now it's happening in Asia. Graduates and a high school student can end up in the same place, right? Because you need curiosity to keep on asking questions. When I taught in Israel School of Management Academic Studies, the college, they were asking me questions continuously. They don't stop asking you questions. So curiosity is very, very, is a seed for genius, right? Next, the courage to defy. It doesn't mean that you are defying the authority because of frustration or ego, but you are defying the norms in order to create a better reality, a better new world. So curiosity, courage, But when you do that, you cannot do that with cynicism or ego. You have to do it with compassion. So next C is in gumption is you need to have love for the subject, love for the people, love for society, and love for humanity at large, as including the environment, the animals, and the air and the sea. So what we need is compassion. Compassion is kind of like seen in materialistic society as weakness, being love. That is like giving love is, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to grab from everybody and destroy all of them and seize all their wealth to yourself. I think that is actually not a good life if you live like that, right? So compassion. So curiosity, courage, compassion, and then commitment. Don't give up. You have to have the tenacity to continuously pursue it because big things are difficult. Businesses are difficult. Social work are difficult. Big ideas are difficult. And the more difficult, the more fun. Because if you are playing a computer game, you like it. You enjoy the most at that highest difficulty point and level. If it was level one or two or three, you are so bored, it's so easy. So life is the same. It's not about difficult or easy, it's about fun or boring. And you need high level of difficulty in order to have fun. But if you want to have fun, you have to have commitment. You have to stay there and hang in there persistently until it happens. So you don't get feel rejection and all this. You just take rejection as normal. And so you will overcome obstacle if you have commitment. The next one is collaboration. You have to be humble. You have to collaborate with other people because if it's only by yourself, your success will be very limited. No matter how big you can be, it will be very limited. Whereas if you are doing collaboration, you start to share success with other people, which require you to be humble. If you don't have humility, then your ego will clash with other people's ego. Collaboration. In order to get collaboration, you need to understand communication. You have to convince people. You have to listen to people. So communication is not about always convincing people. Sometimes they convince you. So you have to be listening. You have to be persuasive. You have to frame narrative in a way that incentivizes people to act. And therefore, that is very, very crucial. Then the next C is community. You cannot think about yourself. You have to think about all the people that you are trying to serve and you're trying to make life better for them. You make life better for them for business. That's also possible. You can make life for them for a better social environment, policy, things that uplift everybody. So it could be a private good, it could be a public good, but both you can uplift people if you think in the community sense, right? If you are a politician and you think about yourself, your power, your popularity, then that might be very stifling. You might fail, but if you think about all the people, you will become a very good politician, a very good leader, a very good company CEO, or even a very good family member. So I think those are critical community. And the last one is about calmness. A lot of time, people are very emotional. They are unable to separate their emotional problem from their real problem. For example, if you cannot find a job, that is a real problem. If you get depressed after 100 tries, then you have two problems. You have a problem of not finding a job, and you have another problem of being depressed. But the second problem is self-inflicted. You created that problem for no reason. So you should understand how to be calm and say, actually, I prefer to have one problem looking for a job, rather than two problems, looking for a job plus feeling very sad. So if you have calmness, you won't have more irrational problem or unnecessary problem. So gumption encapsulate all this, and I wrote this book called The Gumption of Mr. Toilet, using the journey of my work doing business. I started 16 companies, commercial companies, trading with building material, opening the biggest brick factory in Malaysia, biggest clay roof tile factory in Malaysia. I partner with French, Taiwanese, Japanese, Malaysian government, a Singaporean partner. I became a real estate developer, small one in Singapore. And then I set up the Australian International School in Singapore with 3,500 students. Although I myself was still a school failure, I was an ADHD student, which is very irritating for the teacher, and they always ask me to stand outside. So I actually became an outstanding student, and I failed everything in school because I was standing outside the class. But later on in life, I set up the Australian International School simply because I saw that the Singapore don't have Australian curriculum international school. And the Australian guy was grumbling, and when I saw he was unhappy, I saw an opportunity. So every time you see someone unhappy, you can convert that into a business. Eventually, when I was 40, I realized that people live till 80, 80, 82, 83, like that. So I thought, I've already consumed half of the time allocated to me. I've only got 14,600 days, which is 40 years. And then I realized that you don't need more money. You need to make your life useful because you cannot waste time. It is the only currency of life is time. So I sold all my businesses and worked for free for the last 28 years. And this journey is a journey of gumption, about curiosity. Why nobody talk about toilet? Let me go and find out. Courage, defy the norm, and create this new reality called the World Toilet Organization, and let everybody laugh at me. And I don't mind, because when they laugh at me, they are listening to me. They are telling their friends about our mission. And then also eventually to hand over the mission to a new team of people, which is right now what I'm doing. So I think gumption and the social work and the business work, they are all aligned. But if today you don't have this quality of gumption, what will happen is that you will be replaced by AI. So you have to master AI by knowing what to ask AI.
Very good. Oh, that's such a great capture for the word gumption. And I think that really there's so much to break that down. And I'd urge everybody, there'll be links at the bottom of this video where you can catch Jack, Mr. Toilet Lim's book on such amazing work. Let's move to something that I think you just mentioned just in your closing, which is the reality of humor. So let me call this movements that matter. Pun intended. I'm sure you've heard that one before. Humor and humility, as you just said, is part and parcel of having that commitment, that verve in gumption, to say that it doesn't matter. We're going to talk about things that might appear rude, toilet humor, things like that. But at the end of the day, sanitation advocacy is no laughing matter. So, do you have anything that stands out, or something that you might be working on that you might want to galvanize a few people around, that you might remember that, what in this movement do you think could actually apply to some other causes? Because there are a lot of people right now struggling with some very real causes. I mean, one that we're working on right now is things like, HPV awareness for foreign domestic workers here in Singapore, Malaysia, Philippines, Hong Kong, and the reality that is very hard sometimes to get past the kind of like the sort of moral barrier, right? So what would you sort of have as some lessons that some of our listeners could walk away from?
Thank you. By the way, you can also call it a bowel movement. Actually, what I have learned is that whatever we are doing, we have to leverage resources from outside. Our internal resources are always limited, and as a small little NGO that employ only two persons, how could we change the world? And the answer is very easy. Use the other people. Money, power, branding, authority, resources, technology, knowledge, and assemble it and facilitate all the other people to do it so that you don't have to do it. Because what you want, you don't need the accreditation of all the success to yourself. You need them to be accredited to the people who implement them. And your job is to orchestrate resources for the end result, which is people get toilet and people get solar energy and people get drinking water, people get healthcare, people get nutrition, education, anything that you are trying to solve. You must remember, you don't want to solve it all by yourself because that will be very small. But if you were to solve it all over the world, by helping the other people, the impact is exponential. It will reach billions of people, at least hundreds of millions of people. If you don't worry about you being the important person, you have to make them important. So people want to hear how they can contribute so that they can feel good or they can gain a certain incentive out of it. So I say, first of all, in messaging, people want to hear authenticity. They want to hear your intention. So why is it that I've been talking about toilets and poop and shit and pee last 28 years, and I am not seen as a vulgar person? Because they can hear the intention is good. He say it because he wants things to be better. So I think that if you are authentic, it is very, very appreciated by anyone. So for any subject, and anyone who wants to learn how to solve the problem that they are solving can always go to my LinkedIn and make a friend with me and ask me any question. I answer every question. The funny thing is that I don't really get a lot of questions every week. Maybe I get 5 questions, 10 questions out of all the millions and millions of people that got in touch with by via a program like this and media, right? So I saw that the construction workers were paying like 15,000 to the mafia in Bangladesh just to arrange them with all the training and certification and English lesson and etiquette to come to Singapore, which means that the first 2 years of salaries completely goes to the mafia, and only on the third year can they send money home to improve their family. So that is really, really wrong. And I persuaded our Minister of National Development, Desmond Lee, that we should solve this problem, and then he spoke to BCA CEO, and eventually it took now 6.5 years. We mobilized the Asia Philanthropy Circle to run this program, and we brought everybody to Bangladesh several times to see how to work with the biggest NGO there called BRAC. And now there is this new law that allow employer to employ via BRAC directly from Bangladesh without going through the mafia. It is still a lot of enforcement that needs to be done, but at least without the enforcement, we are already bringing in several hundreds of these workers, and we hope that it will eventually replace the current anomaly. I still haven't found the Indonesian one. But I really appreciate that APC is working so hard with us, and it is their success, right? So this is done through our NGO called BOP Hub in partnership with APC, which led a lot of the work, and they pay for a secretariat coordinator. The reality is there are a lot of problems. Very simple thing, like I heard that in Colombia there was child marriage, which is 137 years law, and they were trying to repeal it, to ban it, so that it's so inhumane that a 10-year-old girl, 8-year-old girl got married to an old man, and this just, they are not ready for being a mother, right? And so I work with a lady called Catalina Escobar, who runs an NGO, and she's very influential. And we plot out how to influence the senators, the congressmen, to support this new bill to ban child marriage. And it became a success. This year, February, it became law, and there is no more child marriage allowed in Colombia. So I think this is very, 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 very helpful. And it is their work. I'm just facilitating. So these are the kind of things that I think we can solve, even though the problems are not in Singapore. And there are many other things I do. I started the Dialogue in the Dark Museum in Ngee Ann Polytechnic. So if you guys who is listening want to understand how blind people travel around, you can go into this dark museum and you become blind because you can't see anything. You walk with a stick, and then the blind become sighted. They guide you. And this is now about 20 years and running very well. You can also go to Singapore Science Center and see our Know Your Poo exhibition and understand everything about toilet and what the World Toilet Organization do. So I'm continuously creating this World Toilet Summit in different countries, in Nigeria, Moscow, USA, Belfast, Africa, India. We did a lot with Swachh Bharat as well.
That's so great to hear. I mean, first of all, I mean, just what you mentioned about the Dark Museum, I'd urge everybody to go there. I think I've taken my kids. Whenever I have people coming over, I'm always one to sort of say, experience the kind of innovative gumption, maybe now I can use this word, the gumption opportunities that Singapore offers. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's an absolutely amazing initiative, and I'm glad to hear it's going so strong. In fact, I'll probably visit it again. I haven't been there for a couple of years. Let me shift then to the intersection of technology. Now, let me frame this in how you've just said this, Jack, that there is a soul in movements. There is gumption in the belief and the value and the seas that you talked about, that, you know, you have to be able to storytell, you have to understand symbolism, you have to have earned authority, as you said, that by working alongside different groups of people and institutions, you actually use a lot of that in being able to build authority, advocacy, and get, you know, essentially your story across. So I guess my question, and it doesn't have to be a long answer, but it's more of an observation. Do you think movements today, if let's say you were 40 years old today and deciding, like, I'm going to go down this world of, you know, the toilet movement, do you think it still would be able to retain that soul and gumption in what's becoming an AI-dominated world?
Of course. In fact, it will go much faster. It took me so long because the technology was very, let's say, slow in those days compared to today. So today, if you want to start something, it can go very, very fast. In fact, technologies are neutral. You have to use it. So when I was 59 years old, now I'm 68, right? When I was 59 years old, I went to Singularity University They gave me a scholarship to study technology, cutting-edge technology. Our campus was in the NASA campus in the Silicon Valley, in Mountain View. So we learned 200 technology that were going to emerge, but now it's all here, right? So AI is one of the things. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, all these technology are going to be anti-job, they're going to replace jobs. But actually, if you think about it, what are the things that don't change are more important than the things that change, because the technology will keep on changing, but your character is not going to change. So your authenticity, your passion, your love, your creativity, your sense of purpose, your entrepreneurship, I think those things are the thing we should teach in school, but no teacher know how to teach that. So now I went to Fuhua Secondary School yesterday, and I conducted this talk to 1,000 students, so the entire school was there, about the importance of gumption. And these secondary school kids, they were all fired up. They want to learn this. And the next 2 months later, they will screen my movie, documentary movie called Mr. Toilet, the number two man, the world's number two man. And again, they will learn how difficult it is to be Mr. Toilet, but how he did it. Then we are developing gumption curriculum with the teacher, and Fuhua will be the first secondary school in Singapore, and it's a good secondary school, to develop a gumption curriculum. After that, we will measure metrics, and we will show to whoever is the new Minister of Education that this is what we're needed. And then we'll go to Hwa Chong Institute 2027, and we will go to Raffles, ACS, and then eventually all secondary and primary school, because even primary school, we started with Waterway Primary School. They love it very much. And so, as you can see, I have no authority, I have no power, I have no influence, I have nothing, I've got no budget. But I want to do it. That's the most important thing. And I do it relentlessly, whether it's toilet or education or blindness or human rights, human trafficking or child marriage. You have enough time in your life to solve multiple problems if you have enough energy. And energy comes from purpose and fun. And when it is fun, you have a lot of energy. You know that because when you play computer game, you have a lot of energy. You don't sleep at night, you are playing. So I think the important thing is to teach the next generation how to use AI with a purpose and how not to be replaced by AI, but to be the master of AI. I think the young people can learn it. I'm very optimistic about that. I'm only worried about the midlife people. They might not be able to learn this new thing. So let's use the skill development fund in a more structured way, more useful way, to help people with their livelihood, rather than, you know, you use it for photography and making ang ku kueh and cooking lessons and all hobbies, you know. I don't know, skills future is skills for the future, but it is skills for hobbies. I felt that the government did not fully utilize this in the right way because they put in so much restriction that if somebody like me want to start a lesson to teach gumption, I cannot. I must first get qualified to be a certified course and a certified teacher, and I don't have time to do that. And therefore, all the courses you go there, most of it spend the first day and the last day trying to help you claim your SkillsFuture fund rather than teaching you anything. And I think it's a qualified failure, I would say. Yeah. And billions of dollars wasted.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, take me for example. When I left my own moment that you had about 7 years ago and started to realize that I could do something more, SkillsFuture was actually amazing because I'd never utilized it before that. I never really thought too much about it. But the fact that, I can say I did my master's, the over 40 support, the skills few. And then I said, to your point, if I wanted to actually become a trained instructor, then yes, I have to suddenly spend all this 6 months. So I said, you know what? I'd rather put that into getting an actual degree. And I was the oldest guy in my LKY master's class. I became the president of that class with great humility. But I think there's a lot that people can do in furthering their gumption. And I think that drives us to, I guess, our sort of like conclusion, but never there's never a conclusion with you, Jack. I mean, I think you're every day, I think you must be waking up. I want to ask you what you have for breakfast every day because we could all learn what it is that gives you that energy. But let me call this gumption 2.0. And I think the way that I'm hearing you and the way that you're reflecting on, you're not resting on your laurels. You're not sort of deciding that, right, the things that I've done are great. You're moving into the future. So in the context of, let's call this gumption 2.0, right? Your next 20 years, your next half a century as you move forward, what's your, I guess, in us, I always love to close my sessions, which is if you could summarize this in a word, a sentence, it doesn't have to be in English, it can be in any kind of vernacular. What would your advice to young change makers be when it comes to this seize, the courage, the competence, the fear, the gumption? What would your, let's say, few words be for advice to young change makers today in Singapore, the rest of the world?
So first of all, I want to say that I graduated in Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy when I was 56 years old. So
Beat me
I'm
then.
one of the old,
I was
one of
50.
the oldest. I think that I'm the second oldest graduate over there because I
Excellent.
wanted to learn how to run a country. So public policy. So in that one phrase, how to motivate the young people, I would say to them that no matter how young or how old you are going to die. And you are going to die for sure. So go and start setting up a countdown on your phone of the number of days. Maybe you can take the national average of a male or female in Singapore and do that countdown. And then you will realize how short, how limited the time is, and live a useful life and don't waste it. Because a lot of people waste time, and time is the only thing you have. Don't worry about being rich or famous. Just be your natural self, be happy, be useful, and have a purpose. Thank you very much.
I had a last question for you because you mentioned gumption and we probably landed there, which is if you could reframe gumption today, you created that norm, that name, that term, and its meaning. Do you have something in your mind that would say gumption plus something? Would you have another word that replaces gumption, or would you just call it gumption 2.0 as in a, what would you, if you could reframe gumption, would you have something in your mind then?
I think there is a book by Angela Duckworth called Grit, Grit, who is so very well. She's a professor and she researched about the people who have grit, which is very similar to the word gumption. The American word for gumption is grit. She measured that the people who are successful in society are the ones who have grit. And she didn't tell the story of somebody doing it like herself, but she's a researcher. She tells the story about many people who have grit or gumption who succeeded. And I think my book is told in a different way of using my journey as example so they can hear from the horse's mouth of somebody who did it. But the message is similar. If the book Grit is a bestseller, I hope the gumption of Mr. Toilet can at least sell 50% of the number of books they have. But I would like this book to be a school textbook so as to change the school rote learning system because currently it is totally useless to send your child to tuition, and we spend $2 over billion of tuition, and they became so stressed just to pass an exam of memory test, which is useless eventually, and you cannot find a job. What's the point? It's so silly.
Wow. I mean, I knew that this session was going to be invigorating, and I, as always, I'm always having to be the, you know, the timekeeper as well. I mean, next time we'll, you know, sort of maybe have a second chapter on this. But, you know, Jack, Mr. Toilet, if I may refer, thank you so much for all you do. I think just for our viewers and listeners, this is probably one of the most honest and freewheeling, you know, conversations that I've had in the last few seasons. And I think if my takeaway is that if you know, the sanitation crisis was a starting point, I think ultimately the toilet moment is actually something that the world is getting ready for, and it's not literally. I mean, the world is right now being turned on its head, and you know, learnings from such difficult movements such as what Jack's been up to, I think, to use the same sort of punish words, if we were to flush away our old thinking and embrace the new way of new movements, I think we'd all be better for it. And I want to thank you, Jack,
And
for the time you've given.
Also, always take some role model. For me, growing up in Singapore, this is my role model, Mr. Lee Kuan Yew, and a very big source of energy and inspiration. Find your own role model and try not to be that person, but to take lessons from that person, and you will find things much easier than you imagine.
Thank you,
Thank
Jack.
you very much.
Thank
you.
And for all the listeners, you'll find many links below, so you can have a look at where you can find Jack's book. He's reminded me about the Dark Museum and about various things at the Science Center here for whoever is listening here from Singapore. Do reach out to Jack on his LinkedIn profile. He is always there to sort of respond, and you won't find a better mentor than Mr. Jack here. So thank you, Jack, and thank you for our listeners and viewers for watching. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.